He's John Dragunas. I'm Paul Reese, and you are listening to Double Underscore. Hey, John, how's it going?
Oh, it's not too bad. Hanging in there. It's been kind of a busy week this week. We're recording at the end of the week instead of the beginning, and that's probably a reflection of the way my days have went.
Yeah, that's. I'm in the same boat. We both had to. Oh, actually, I think I said I had to push, and you seemed relieved when I said let's do it later in the week.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I've had a day full of back to backs and a night full of things going on after work. It's been or a week, I guess, of things going on after work. It's been one of those weeks, but that's okay. It's almost coming to an end, and never gonna complain talking about work a little bit more after work. You know why not?
Why not? What else are we going to do with this podcast that's all about work?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. We could talk about sports.
Yeah. Or we could talk about work.
Yeah. But it's almost March Madness, Paul. I don't know.
There is March Madness. We should probably save that because the tournament just started today. That's how you know what day we're recording.
Yeah.
But I was actually traveling this week. There hasn't been a lot of travel for me since COVID, but it seems like it's starting to come back. I was in Dallas a couple of months ago. I was in Dallas again this week, totally different customer. And there's talk of some new projects coming up that'll have some travel. So it seems like people are getting back into wanting us to go on site, which I have mixed feelings about.
Weren't you in Indiana a couple months ago too?
Indiana doesn't ring a bell.
I thought you were in Indiana.
But I probably was somewhere. Oh, I was. Yeah, that's true.
Indiana. You're up in my neck of the woods.
Yeah, that was back in like September or something.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, man. That's way longer ago than I thought it was. Okay.
Well, yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, mixed bag on traveling. It's fun. I like getting on site, but pros and cons.
I love it early in the project because you have an opportunity to establish rapport. Get a feel for, you know, how people really are, have a meal with them, get to know them a little bit deeper. And then that, if you can establish some trust and real relationship, it can really like grease the skids for everything else you're doing on the project, right? So if a customer trusts me, they're less likely to escalate and be upset. They're more likely to give me the benefit of the doubt when they come at me with a problem or a concern, right? So, and it works both ways too, right? I don't see a bad decision in my mind and think, this person doesn't know what they're doing. It's like, no, I met this person. They're smart, they're reasonable, and maybe they're just thinking about something I'm not. So I think it evens us both out, both sides, I should say, through the life cycle of the project. So love it for that reason.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I could go down a whole topic here and I'll refrain, but it's funny how much of consulting is relational and not like, hey, I trust you because you are clearly a subject matter expert in this space, which is true and it's valuable. But man, if you can't build a relationship and you're a subject matter expert, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Somebody could be a much, you know, more qualified expert than me. And there's plenty of them out there. But if I don't trust them or like them as a person, I don't actually care how much they know.
Yeah.
It's easy
yeah.
for me to take their advice and say, yeah, but you're a jerk. So I don't
right.
care.
It's a funny soft skill piece of consulting that I feel like you don't think about until you actually do it.
But. You know, that reminds me, I took my son years ago on site. Well, not to the customer's office, but I had a week long trip visiting a customer and my wife was taking my daughter somewhere else. They had a girls trip. And so I think my son was like 15 at the time. He packed up his PlayStation and just hung out in the hotel. So I was telling this customer about it and they're in the Midwest and they were really friendly. They said, well, you should bring him to the baseball game. They were having a team get together at the baseball game. They said, bring your son. He'll have a good time. So we went and before the game, we all met up to just chat for a bit. And it turned into one of those like crowded kind of sports bar places where it was standing room only and it was really loud. And people were sort of standing in like a semicircle just talking. And most of them were drinking beers. Obviously, my son was drinking a Coke. And Afterwards,
clearly you're not from Wisconsin.
Clearly. So I said that little 45 minutes before the game was probably the most valuable time of my day, of my work day. And it turned into a good lesson. Like, don't, no matter what you do for a living, no matter what your job is, if you can invest a little extra time to get to know people, assuming you understand like basic decency and you're the kind of person that people enjoy spending time with, those relationship things go a long way and they just smooth out so many bumps. So that was fun to get to teach my son that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Paul, I've got a story for you about a customer I was thinking about, and I think it'll relate into the topics we have kind of talked about for today. So I've got a customer, I don't know, maybe implemented a couple years ago, it doesn't matter. And it's pretty funny. It's a customer that was really pretty challenging as far as some difficult personalities, but also just difficult requirements and misaligned expectations, right? Which that happens. It happens on projects all the time. But it's one of those projects that was really just kind of a grind to get through. And frankly, I think you actually worked with me on this a little bit, but frankly, a customer that I probably thought at the time would make it, I don't know, maybe a year, maybe 2 years, and they might just end up churning on the product because it just didn't really seem like a good fit for them. And so I was thinking about them because I recently learned that they've actually become quite a reference, if you will, for Certinia, and maybe not directly talking to tons of other customers or things like that, but they really sing the praises of the product and what it's done for them from like an automation perspective, from a data consistency perspective, and even from a process perspective, which is interesting because some of the places we got the most pushback was, hey, like your system just doesn't work with our processes. And it's one of those examples where we just kept grinding and kept just saying like, hey, there's a reason our product works the way that it works. It's designed this way intentionally. We went through requirements and changed the way it works where it made sense. But we didn't want to change it so much so that it would kind of take you guys out of the benefit of owning this product. And just to see that transformation of grinding and pushing through to them now being a pretty great customer and potentially, you know, a continually expanding customer with Certinia and with the Salesforce platform, pretty interesting kind of use case for me of like really just kind of, you know, projects can be uncomfortable, I guess is what it comes down to for me, right? And that doesn't necessarily indicate the success of the customer if you are working well for them or not. Like there's going to be friction, right? In any project that you work on. And 6 months down the road, 12 months down the road is probably more telling about how that project is going to end up. And in this case, frankly, I was just dead wrong. I pushed through because I was like, well, we got to get this done, not thinking that they would become a client that really appreciates the product that we built for them.
Okay. So I have so many questions, but I want to start with what changed their perception of things? Was it just slow, gradual improvements that all made a difference over time? And how much of that were you involved in, or did you just kind of like hear after a year of not really working with them that, oh, they're actually happy now? Like how close to you were it? How close to it were you? And what do you think it was that made the difference?
Oh, I jumped ship as soon as I could. No, I'm just kidding. That's not accurate. Yeah, I would say I was very close for a pretty extended period of time and, you know, checking in and things like that, because even though, you know, you might not want to, it's just a good thing to do in the space. It's good to just kind of extend that olive branch and show that, hey, I care about your success. But during the project, I was very involved, and even post the project more than we would maybe typically be involved in a support model, right? For several months past what we would typically maybe consider post go live support. And a lot of it was really just kind of, you know, continuing to show, continuing to teach, continuing to reteach, those types of things, even when it felt like we weren't really making progress. That being said, there's definitely been a period of time where, hey, we weren't really engaged. We weren't really doing a lot, at least from a services perspective, and they were just kind of on their own. And so I think it was two things. I think that the first thing is, while it seemed at the time they didn't like us, frankly, that's what it seemed like. I think they trusted us and we just couldn't see past it because there was like the, you know, to our point before, maybe the human element of having this like overarching feeling like, do they really trust us? Do they really think we're the right fit from a product perspective and from a consulting perspective? But we didn't let that get in the way of the level of service we provided them, which is really hard to do. I can't say I've done that every time I've been in this situation. And then secondly, I think frankly, this is going to sound super cheesy, but there's an aspect of distance makes the heart grow fonder. And so I think when they got away from the initial implementation, they actually started using the product. They started seeing what the product could do for them from a consistency perspective and a process perspective. I think they started to actually see, oh, maybe our consulting team did really actually have our best interest in mind the whole time. And maybe this product really can actually do a lot of what we're looking for. Maybe not everything, right? No product is the end all be all solution for all of your problems. It's just not possible. But I think they started to see, oh, the data we can track on our projects that we couldn't track before is really valuable. The ability to see what's our actual budget, what's our estimated at completion budget, how are we burning against that, those types of things, like what's the capacity of our people, right? They started seeing that and using that as actually got data in the system, and I think they slowly built up trust that they just couldn't quite see in the maybe cyclical aspect of the project and just the never-ending testing.
Yeah, there is this kind of transition that customers sometimes can go through, especially if they're skeptical, especially if they're not, you know, they get some answers they don't love early in the implementation, and then it can kind of just sour the outlook on like, oh, I wouldn't have bought this thing, or it's not as good as I would have designed it, or any number of like attitude related things that just make things go slower. And by the way, that's not just customers subject to that. That's, you know,
we're subject to
can
that.
Get the same way too.
Yeah. If I have a horrible interaction with the customer early,
if not more.
Yeah. It's hard to bounce that.
Yeah. But there's the thing that, as you were telling that story a little bit, is everything is theoretical during the implementation. But once you start looking at real data, like, you know, in your example, just like resource capacity, people's schedules, who's available to work on what project, when and where, and all that stuff. When you start looking at that data and you can see an example and you're like, oh, this actually is that person's scheduled hours. Oh, that's interesting. What does the system tell me they're going to be free? Oh, in 2 months, let me go ask them. Yep. 2 months. That's right. Oh, okay. Let me use that. And then it becomes less theoretical and more real. Like, oh, I can just update it. Oh, okay. I get it. And there's that click moment that sometimes for customers doesn't happen until like 2 months after go live, unfortunately, right? Because it's like the bad news and the things that they didn't get that they did want, or vice versa, the things they got that they didn't want, or whatever, those just kind of become oversized. Mm-hmm. And once the consultants go away, I think there's something to that. It's like, okay, it's just us now. We got to use this thing. How are we going to do it? Then it's like your perspective is actually, it's not that bad. It's really good. And we don't have the same problems we had before. And now we can do all these new things. It's just hard to see that until you're totally on your own.
Well, and I think it's a frame of mind thing, right? Because during the sales process, it's like eyes wide open. We're really excited about what we could have from a customer perspective, right? They see a lot of cool things. They want all those things. Then you get into the project. And the project is interesting because I think consultants emphasize what's good, but they focus behind the scenes on what could be not good, right? Like, what are the risks, all that stuff. And they might not bring that up all the time, but they're always peripherally focused on it, at least if they're a good consultant, right? Like, I think you and I have joked a million times, the best consultants are paranoid consultants, because they're focused on all the things that could go wrong. But like, even when I'm focused on those things, I'm emphasizing the things that are going to go right for a customer when I can, right? Because I want them to see what's great about the tool that they bought. And it's not a sales thing. It's just, I want them to realize like, hey, you bought a tool that's going to provide value. And the customer in an implementation, I think, is probably magnifying the things that they don't like, that they didn't think were going to be true in the sales cycle.
Right. Right.
And add to that in a system they're uncomfortable with. And so I think it's just like we're coming at it from totally different lenses.
Definitely.
To a certain extent. And it creates a little bit of a uncomfortable feeling.
Yeah. And a good consultant, there's always the ideal, right? So when I say a good consultant does something, it doesn't mean that I always do it this way, but like there's still the ideal, even when I fall short. A good consultant can recognize the actual kind of attitude and outlook of everyone in the customer, as well as everyone on the consulting team and everyone else involved peripherally, and synthesize all of that and be able to separate, okay, there's some negativity coming from here and here. There's some over-optimism coming from here and here. What do I think is the most important thing to focus on? And if sometimes you need to like get people's spirits up and focus on the positive, say, look, yeah, I know these negative things or these concerns are here and they're valid. But if we back up and focus on why we're doing this and the value we're going to get, let's not lose sight of A, B, and C, right? Mm-hmm. You can sort of bring them along when you lose momentum, if that happens.
Right.
And by the same token, if the customer is too relaxed and they're just like, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine. You all know what you're doing. Let us know when it's done. And they're just not paying attention.
Right.
Like, that's a time to say, hold on, you're not taking this seriously enough. And here's what can go wrong from that. So we have to be able to play both sides based on what's required for the project. And I think the temptation as a consultant is to let the customer's attitude shape ours. Right? Customer's too negative, fine, I'll be negative too. Customer's too optimistic and making too many bad assumptions, fine, I'm just going to let them.
Yeah.
And that's not good, even when it's tempting.
Yeah, there's an appropriate level of concern that both parties should have. There's too concerned, and frankly, at that point, the negative attitude blows up the project, not the project itself. And then there's like lack of concern, which the worst thing about lack of concern is usually you don't find out the project was a fail until 6 months later when the customer's like, yep, this isn't working for us. We're going back to one of your competitors.
I of those two extremes, I would always choose the overly concerned customer though. And I say this.
Well, until the project halts in its tracks. I've had that happen.
Yeah, but that's not from over concern.
It's rare.
That's something different.
That's true.
I'm talking about customers who are so skeptical of me when I meet them that when I provide an answer, they'll say like something sarcastic, you know, in return.
Oh, sure.
Or that's not the same answer I got when I asked somebody else. I was seeing if you would agree and you don't. And now I'm concerned about that. And just like coming at it from this really bad faith perspective, when I have customers like that, especially, and they're like that early on, and I have one right now, mm-hmm. that's a brand new customer, I just lean into those people and I'll say something like this, like, I can tell you're really concerned about this. And I think that's great. I think you should be. I don't think you should trust me yet because you don't know me. So you're checking out who you can trust and what facts are real. And I support that. I think it's great. So my guess is you've probably had some bad experiences or worked with some bad vendors. So I want to be on your side. Like, what has happened that you're trying to prevent from happening this time around? And how can I be a part of that? So I'm looking for a way to, like, they're drawing a line in the sand and saying, you're on this other side. And I'm looking for ways to step over that line and say, no, I want to be on your side. I want to be worried about the same things you're worried about. Help me do that. If I don't know what you're worried about, maybe it's just you think I'm dumb. That's fair. That could be true if you don't know me. But I want to know what it is. More likely, there's some business reason, like they had the worst, you know, professional year of their career because they trusted the vendor too much or whatever. The more I know that, the more I can kind of lead with that in future discussions and say, hey, here's what I did to fact check these answers. And here's who I talked to. And I find that I can build rapport with those people way more than I can turn somebody who's just disinterested.
Yeah, I like to do that. I will admit that sometimes I let my snark get the best of me, or like some people call it Midwest passive aggressiveness. Like that's a thing. And I say the wrong thing and I'm just like, you know what? I don't care what you think. So, should never do that, but I have done it before.
Well, I mean, I've seen you do the opposite way more than that. I mean, I've seen you stick with customers way more than you've lost your cool in the moment. I can't even think of when you've done that. Maybe you just don't tell me.
I would say 90% of the time I stick with customers well past when I should, because I care way too much. I'm way too customer obsessed sometimes. But yeah. Occasionally, I've let it slip and said stupid things on calls that I shouldn't have said. But, you know, live and learn.
That's right. So, John, I love that story because the thing that I wanted to talk about, I found myself saying the following quote to somebody. And as soon as I said it, I asked myself, not out loud, that would have been weird. I thought,
I could see it though. Let's be real.
Is that true? Do you really believe that, Paul? Sometimes I just blurt things out. And this is what I said. I said, look, you can either be comfortable or you can be good at your job, but you can't be both. And as soon as I said that, I thought, wait a minute, do I believe that? Sometimes I say things I don't believe and I have to think about it and then pull it back and say, actually, I don't think I believe that. But in this case, I thought about it. And I think as blunt as that's phrased, you can be comfortable or good at your job, but not both. I think the spirit of it is generally true. And here's what I mean. Comfortable meaning not worried about anything going wrong. Feeling like you have the appropriate time to deliver what you need to. Feeling like you're surrounded by the appropriate team to support you where you need it. Feeling like the customer understands what's expected from them, and they're going to follow through on what they need to do and not derail the project. And everything's just going to go on track. And I feel good about that. And that allows me to clock out sharply at 5 p.m. and enjoy my evening and not think about work, because I enjoy my work and I have a comfortable life. That's the kind of comfort I'm saying is not productive with being good at your job. So first, before I try to justify that, what do you think about that? Do you agree with it? Do you think it's only right sometimes?
I was gonna disagree with you, but I feel like you redefined comfortable too much for me to disagree with you all the way. So I'll say this. I think you can be comfortable and good because you can be a good consultant. But what I'll say, and maybe this is what you're actually trying to say, I don't think you can be comfortable and actually doing the work you're capable of. So I remember a couple years ago saying something to you along the lines of like, man, Paul, I feel like the longer I consult, the more difficult projects I get. And you're like, yeah, when you get better, people trust you with difficult projects more often, which is a blessing and a curse, because I feel like more often than not, I end up with projects that are challenging for XYZ reasons, right? Maybe it's a people challenge. Maybe it's a requirement challenge. Maybe it's a timeline challenge, right? But like the longer I consult, the more capable I am of taking that challenge and turning it into a successful project. And it's probably because I'm more and more okay with being uncomfortable during a project. So I disagree with you in that I think you can absolutely be comfortable and I think you can be good, but I don't think you're ever going to get better if you're always comfortable.
So, all right, good. I'm glad we disagree, because I want to debate this just a little bit and explain why I think it's broadly true. And maybe it does depend a little bit on like the, okay, what is the definition of comfortable? But what I mean is like relaxed and believing that things are mostly going to be okay. Not totally naive, right? I'm not talking about extremes. I'm just talking about within the, there's going to be a spectrum of comfort level. On your worst day, you're super anxious about something that you just feel is going to go really bad and it's going to have bad consequences for you personally and professionally. Then on the other end of the spectrum, you just feel like nobody's told me about any big problems, so I don't have anything to worry about. So as far as I know, I'm just doing my work and meeting deadlines and making people happy. Within that spectrum, of course, there's going to be worse and bad days. It doesn't mean you can't have a good stretch of several days or a week or weeks where things are mostly good. That's not the point.
Sure.
To me, the point is in the kind of micro moment, mm-hmm. where an issue comes up that's a risk, and if your initial thought is, well, I'm glad we learned about that risk because now that we know about it, we can track it and it'll be fine. That's one response. Mm-hmm. The other response is, oh man, I can't believe we didn't hear about this until now. What could we have done to spot it earlier? And why wasn't I the one who brought this up? Or why isn't anybody else thinking about this or taking it seriously? The sort of worrying nature, mm-hmm. I think, is the thing that I've found most common with the best people that I've worked with over the years. That the people who are just, who seem the most naturally talented, who rise to the top faster, who get promoted faster, who have the respect of their team members, in a short period of time, those people tend to be worriers about the details and have a harder time being comfortable and just enjoying the work and enjoying the moment and enjoying the whole process and the whole chaos. It's the people that can't enjoy it because it feels like it's falling apart and they have this magnified sense of doom that are better. I don't know if it's a cause and effect, if it's just a...
Okay, yeah. So that's what I was going to say. I think I get what you're saying now, and I'm not saying we're going to rephrase it on you, but you're not... You're more so saying that like being uncomfortable is borderline a product of being good.
Or vice versa.
Sure.
I think it's
being average. I mean, I think...
Yeah.
Okay, the reason I'll agree with you on that a little bit more is... It goes back to the thing I said like 10 minutes ago or something like that, right? The best consultants are paranoid. And paranoia isn't exactly comfortable, right? So...
Right, right.
I agree with you. I think there are things you can do to mitigate that and should do to mitigate that because it can become unhealthy. But if I said no... to every this is where it gets weird to me, and maybe I'm just reading between the lines too much. If I said no to every project because I thought I was going to be uncomfortable, I would never have work. First off, but
right,
there's also times right. I will say,
you ever got that perfect project just like handed to you? It's gift wrapped. Oh, it's a company and a brand you admire, and the people are all like that. That's happened fewer than 5 times in my career.
I'm going to fully say, and I'm going to throw you under the bus here, and someone that used to work at Citrinia that I have a lot of respect for. you guys once sold me, you and this other guy, sold me on this project that was quote unquote wrapped in a bow. That was the most prepared customer ever. That turned into the least prepared customer I have ever worked with in my life. So...
You're going to have to tell me who that was off there.
I'm more likely to run the other way if someone tells me that this customer is going to be great and wrapped in a bow and good to go. Like that's crap. You just didn't ask enough questions.
Oh, that's very possible. But I'm going to choose to disbelieve you and say you're confusing me with somebody else. And I'm just going to gaslight you until you drop it. That's going to be my strategy on that one.
I'll tell you who it was after, and you'll be like, oh, I did say that, I think. I think it might have been...
I was in a different job John, it was my job to get people on projects.
It was definitely a desperate.
To the extent I did that.
It was a desperate Paul measure. And you were like, ah, John will forgive me. It's fine.
John always gets over it. He'll come back around.
I do think this customer that I'm speaking of came off as very prepared. So I see how you guys would have been massively wrong about it, but it's okay. I forgive you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now I'm very uncomfortable.
Good. Good. Now you're good. According to you.
Now I'm good. So I had, this reminds me, and I think you worked with this person, but we had somebody on the team a while back who was a top performer who I really enjoyed working with, made customers really happy, just, you know, kind of a model consultant in a lot of ways. And when this person told me that they weren't super, you know, they weren't really convinced that it was the right role for them. Loved the company, loved the team, just wasn't really sure consulting was what the direction they wanted to continue and were thinking about going into a different direction in their career. And so we talked about that. And one of the things I learned was it was the daily stress. Like when you're on projects and we're often on multiple projects at a time, not everybody has to deal with that. And sometimes it's like way too many projects at a time. You have demands that are both short-term and long-term. You have to deliver things sometimes in a hurry. Sometimes you have to improvise. Sometimes you're put on the spot. Sometimes you miss something and then it comes out in a call and it's in public and you have to figure out how to professionally like apologize and take responsibility and deal with, like, you're dealing with a lot.
Totally.
And the person said, I just don't think that, you know, that's true in other careers. And what I told this person, now I gotta call them and see if I was right. I said, yes, you're right. That is true. But what I've seen from you is you're the kind of person who's going to take that anxiety with you to whatever job you go to next. And there's something about feeling that pressure and recognizing it as pressure and internalizing it and that feeling that if it doesn't get done well, it's my name on it, and I want my name only on high quality things. I think that has maybe as much to do with how stressful things feel than the actual circumstances.
Oh,
and that's what I think you bring with you to whatever job you're doing.
I will 100% agree with that, and even go as far as to say that, like, when I went off on my own, I had this like made up idea in my head that I would somehow be less stressed because, well, I could control my work. And then I realized I am the problem. So,
yeah.
So, well, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Wherever you go, there you are. That's the old expression.
Yeah. I think I take just a little too much pride in my work sometimes. Good and bad. Good and bad.
Yeah. And I remember when I was a business owner years ago, and I was telling my business partner, I think once we get to this like plateau of X number of employees or whatever it was in my mind, I was like, I think once we get there, it won't be so stressful. And she said, no, you don't get it. The bigger you get, the more stressful it gets. This is the least stressful it's ever going to be.
I
was so terrified by that.
That is such a true statement though. I mean, that is so true. I've talked to people that
it is
make as much as NFL football players that are more stressed about finances than I am. You know, just that idea of scaling. I've talked to people that are VPs, CEOs, they're always more stressed, right? And it's just the higher you go in any way, shape, or form, it's going to be a little bit, there's a whole psychology thing behind that, right, too. And it's even just like the, you know, you're always left wanting more, and it's sometimes it's lonely at the top.
Yeah, so that makes me question, is it the stress that makes you better, or is it that you're better that makes you stressed?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Or is it both?
Yeah, I get what you're saying though. I mean, I agree. There's absolutely a trend in high performers and on average being more uncomfortable and maybe a lack of contentment in their career or whatever, lack of stress, again, you name it, right? Like, I think there's probably a correlation there. That's fair.
So I'm not a project manager. And so this isn't really project management advice, but it sometimes comes across as it. So I'm going back a little bit to when I had a consulting business and I had a team and we were trying to formalize our methodology and document it and train on it and get it simple enough to where it could be communicated and remembered, but complex enough to where it was actually useful and not just a carbon copy of everybody else's methodology. And so we did this on-site learning session where a lot of it was around the methodology. How do we introduce this? How do we make it real? How can we operate as a team as we grow and not have everybody just simply operating on their wits? And what I found myself doing a lot was kind of role playing, like, okay, here you are in this hypothetical project, you're in this phase of the project, this is your role, and here's the situation. All right, now stop. Fast forward to the next phase of the project. Between here and there, what are all the things that could go wrong that you can think of that haven't gone wrong yet? How much can you think of to possibly anticipate? And the people have been doing, you know, we'll just say projects generically longer, can think of more things that can go wrong because they've experienced more things that can go wrong, mm-hmm. to the point where it sounds like a writer's room and you're just making things up. Like, no customer would ever come out with that objection or that situation. Nope. So probably it's because they've been there, right? Like being at an on-site when half the team is laid off and that wasn't expected. Now everybody's depressed. Like those things happen.
Hold on. Has that happened to you?
So to me, that did happen. Oof, yeah.
That's rough. Okay. Sorry.
So, keep going. It was the customer's layoff.
Oh, that's still really rough though.
On site.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah. It was super awkward.
Sorry. I digress. I just had to ask.
But I think there's something I was basically telling the team as I was delivering this training, you're not paranoid enough. Right? That's the bottom line. It's like, well, you can only think of 6 things that could go wrong, and I could think of at least 12. So I'm more paranoid than you, therefore I'm more prepared, right? That's the sort of rough version of what I was saying. And there's a truth to it. Like, I do want people to think ahead, to think what could go wrong, because something will. And the question is, if you're so caught off guard by the thing that went wrong that you don't know what to do about it and you're having to deal with it in real time, you're not going to be nearly as effective at handling that compared to, oh, I thought this could go wrong and I put, you know, enough thought into it to where I'm prepared for it. Doesn't mean it's not a problem. Doesn't mean you don't have to work through it, but it does mean you're not knocked back on your heels and ready to just give up on the whole thing.
Yeah. You know, it'd be an interesting exercise when you get a new project.
What's that?
Spend an hour as a team internally. Although it'd be fun to actually do with the customer too. And literally just like write out every risk you can anticipate based on the sow and like what you know so far.
Well, I've done something similar a lot. When I used to kick off projects a lot more than I get to in my current role, I would lead the discussion and like the key people, especially in the introduction round, I would always leave lots of time for introductions because one of the things I want to know about the customer and all the people there is how many of these kinds of projects have you been involved in your career? Mm. Are you implementing new software?
Yeah.
And then if the answer is one, okay, great. How did that go? What went well? What went bad? And I always get an answer. Everybody always has an opinion. Oh, here's what went well. The people were really nice. They knew what they were doing. Okay, what went bad? They didn't know how to manage to a budget. Okay, that's pretty bad. So chances are that person is more focused on the thing that went wrong before than anything else. Okay, you're worried about budget. Good. I know where you're coming from. I can get ahead of that and I can make sure that they're copied on budget and that there's like maybe a discussion scheduled so that the thing that's top of mind what they're paranoid about justifiably, I've got a plan for that. But I don't want to be surprised 3 months later when I don't know why they're frustrated. I don't know where they're talking to me the way they are, right? Oh, it's because you've got this concern that's unaired, unvoiced. You got to give those things air.
Yeah. Yeah, I know for sure. That's a good call. I mean, I think either asking risks that they've identified for the given project or risks that they've experienced in the past in similar projects, either one can give you an insight into what you're working with.
Yep. Another good question to ask is what are you most worried about on this project?
Yeah.
Because everybody has one answer at least.
Right. Right.
And people like answering it. They enjoy, oh, I'm worried that this is going to go wrong. I'm worried that, you know, it's not hard to come up with an answer. Everybody's got to worry.
Right. Right. That's the value of a good kickoff. Another topic for another day, but that's,
oh yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I really believe the more you can just surface that stuff that, you know, polite society says, well, maybe let's not say that in a group setting. I don't want to be a Debbie Downer. And no offense to all you Debbies out there, but I don't want to be the kind of person who's going to bring everybody down. It's too early. It's a kickoff. Let's all be happy.
Yeah, and but man, it builds trust because if clients
it
see,
really does.
See that you're seeing risks before they're seeing risks or at least considering them. Like that's just, yeah, that's just a good thing to do every time. I've never raised a risk to a client and had the client be like, oh, wow, I'm offended that you raised that risk. You know, maybe you word it a little differently if it's directly about them, but like, you know, it's still okay to raise it.
Yeah. I think I've told you this. I even had a customer one time where I had a risk of getting paid. I was late getting paid. It was like 2 weeks past due, which isn't the worst.
Yeah.
But I put it together with some other signs on the project and, you know, one particular person from my customer who I didn't feel was prioritizing their project responsibilities enough. And I kind of thought, well, between paying us late and these other things that have gone on, mm-hmm. I asked the CEO of the company, I said, Here are the facts that I'm looking at. And it appears to me that maybe the reason that you're not paying me is because you're planning on canceling the project and you feel like you don't want to continue paying a vendor if you're not going to keep them around. Is that what's going on? And his response was, I totally understand why you would think that. If I was in your situation, I would think that too. That makes sense. But that's not what's going on, and let me tell you why. And he had a great answer, and everything worked out.
That's good.
So that's the most I've like directly confronted somebody to just say, hey, are you trying to stiff me?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The reaction was super positive, actually. Because I didn't accuse. I just said, here's what it looks like. Please correct me.
I think there's a big benefit in being tactfully direct on projects.
Yeah, and people who are tactful struggle to be direct and vice versa.
True.
It's really hard to be good.
That's the hard, yeah, it's a hard balance to find. I struggle with it at times. I'm either too tactful or too direct, trying to find the middle ground. But man, when you actually strike it, it's not overly common that someone's going to get upset about it.
Right, right.
That being a prime example.
We're going out of order, but that's actually something I learned. This week, you just reminded me. I learned this from a customer when I was on site. And what I learned was when this person needed to send an email that was disagreeable in some way, right? Needing to correct something or take a different position. He said he writes out the email and then he runs it through ChatGPT and he just says, take all the emotion out of this message. And it rewrites it. And it actually explained, like, here's why I changed this word for that word and I removed this part. And he said he's just learned to rely on that. Any email now goes through ChatGPT and he just says, take the emotion out.
That's actually wise. I think emotion can, positive and negative, can sometimes distract from the message we're trying to communicate within reason, right? Like we're emotional beings, but particularly written language that, That's not a horrible idea.
Yeah, I'm kind of mixed on that because I've seen, you know, just my personality tends to come across more even keeled, not very emotional. If to the extent that I'm being emotional, usually I'm trying to get a laugh.
Sure.
Right. To just bring some levity, but I'm not going to bring anger and like negative emotion. That's just my style. But I've worked with plenty of people who do have that negative emotional energy. And when it's applied wisely and when it's not used all the time, but reserved for situations that actually warrant a bit of a wake-up call, that can be really effective too. I just think, you know, if you've got control over the anger versus the anger controlling you, it can be applied effectively. It's people who can't control their anger that lose respect.
That's fair. That's a good point. There's always space for emotions. And I mean, I think even like in project levels, there's going to be times where we're frustrated and, you know, I don't want to sit there and beat it around the bush and act like everything's okay when it's not. But to your point, yeah, controlling it is important.
So maybe we can kind of wrap this discussion with this one concept. Part of me wonders if for consultants who wonder if the career is for them, I'm not really sure this job is for me. The last three projects I've been have been just total nightmares and I'm so stressed and I never used to be this stressed. And take that scenario. You know, I also catch myself telling people probably more often than I should, but I say you have to embrace the chaos. It's a chaotic business that we choose to be in. And if you can't accept it and love it for its chaoticness, for being just what it is and the thing that stresses you out, if you're not capable of appreciating that aspect of the work, it probably isn't for you. But at the same time, I do want people a little anxious, a little worried. I want them thinking about what are other people not worried about that they should be. There's a mix. And I wonder what's the difference between, I'll just say, somebody like you and me, where we can get frustrated some days with too much stress, but for the most part, you know, 90%+ of the time we're like, yeah, it's chaotic, but it's the normal level of chaos. And
right,
I don't hate my job. And most of the things about it, I really enjoy and it's okay. And of course there's, you know, a handful of great days and a handful of terrible days in the mix, but we just kind of think, yeah, that's the way the water is in this pool. It's kind of choppy,
right?
But we like it.
Yeah.
And other people are like, yeah, I hate this water. I want out.
Yeah.
I still can't figure out what that is.
Yeah. I don't know.
What do you think, John? Do you have any theories?
I don't. You know, I go back to, you have customers in every job, right? And I think service is particularly difficult because we're on the hook for delivering a product that the customer has sold. And sometimes that product is really difficult to deliver. But like, I go back to my admin days, right? Like I still had a customer. It's just my customer was internal, which sometimes is worse, to be honest. Because like you're working with them 40 hours a week, 4 weeks a month, 12 months a year, you know, whatever. Like, I mean, you're with them all the time, 365. So it's a little bit of pick your poison, I guess. What's more stressful to you? What's less stressful? What's more fun? What's less fun? I don't know. I think the people that are going to enjoy consulting are people that are looking and thriving on high pace, like fast pace. Right. And new challenges, new problems every single day, every single week, every single project. Like that's what it comes down to. I think the burnout is high in consulting because the pace is high. Truly. I think that's what it is. And I think good consultants leave consulting because the pace is high. I don't know what the fix is for that, but it's definitely part of the reality.
Yeah. I think you've just described ADHD.
Ironic.
I think for people with ADHD, that can be a dream job.
It could also crush you when your attention span is like 31 seconds. So, you know, who knows?
Well, but here's my counter. If your attention span is 31 seconds, which, by the way, is a little bit of a, I mean, that's not true. People with ADHD are typically capable of hyperfocus more than people without it. It's just that the focus is narrowly directed. It's just the ability to focus is limited to things that are naturally interesting.
Yes.
Whereas to apply that focus to something that feels boring is where it starts to feel impossible. But the interruption, I used to joke at this company I worked at a long time ago. I said, we have an interruption driven culture because everybody was in cubicles, walking up to everybody else in cubicles saying, you got a minute?
Yeah.
And people would complain about that constantly. Too many interruptions. People won't let me work. And I was like, yeah, isn't it great?
Yeah.
Because to somebody who struggles with attention, those interruptions are actually what energizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So if I go through phases where I'm like all day, I'm just interrupted one thing after another. Somebody's reaching out. Somebody's asking for something. Somebody has a crisis they need emergency help with. And I feel like, man, I love those days sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I think it goes back to what we were talking about maybe last week. I don't know, maybe a couple weeks ago, but, just that concept of it sometimes being harder to find deep focus, but man, I love a day that just is filled to the brim with meetings and conversations and things like that. Cause they're fun days. They're fun days.
Yep. They can be. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, John, I think we've about covered it, at least for this episode. I'm sure we'll continue talking about that question we can never quite get to the bottom to, which is what makes a great consultant versus what makes a bad consultant.
Yeah, and what makes consultants burn out.
Yeah, so. I think it's really tied to those same questions, because if I find what makes a great consultant, I want to learn from that. And if I find what burns people out, I want to avoid that.
Absolutely.
All right, John. Well, that's it for this week. It's always great chatting with you. And thanks, everybody, for listening in. We hope you will join us next time.
Thanks, Paul. Looking forward to next week. Earth is flat, guys. Earth is flat.
Yeah, I've already pledged my allegiance elsewhere. My secret fraternity has a very strict non-compete.
Oh my goodness.